Hello, everybody. Hello, hello, hello. This is Dr. Carla Wills Brandon, and you are about to take a walk to the other side with me, your host, your afterlife traveling guide. On this program, we dissect the incredible amount of death phobia the clergy, media, and the so-called scientifically minded have plagued us with. Geez, so many people are running around. They're so incredibly fearful of death. What has been stolen from us is that internal notion that physical death is just a myth, gang. It's a myth. Today is my 50th birthday. Yahoo! I can't believe I made it to 50. With my history and how wild I was in my youth, I am amazed that I made it to 50. So I've been having a ball today. I just got through having dinner with some family and friends, ran back here so that I could be with you fine folks, have gotten all sorts of great, disgusting, getting old email cards and cards from people who love me. It's just been an absolute riot. Some people have, of course, you've always got those duds. We've all got them, gang. We've all got those duds who go, oh, my God, you're turning 50. Oh, it's all downhill from now. And it's not like they're joking, gang. They're, like, serious. They are serious. The end of the world is upon you because you have hit the big 5-0. I am telling you, we live in a society that just looks at aging as if it's some sort of horrific disease. I went and did one of those woman things for my birthday. I went and I got the facial, you know, where they slap all the junk on your face and smack it around a little bit and scrub you here and scrub you there and then spray you with stuff that makes you smell nice. And the woman who was doing my facial, she goes, well, you know, what happens when you age is gravity takes hold. And if we did a little of this and if we did a little of that, you know, you could look like you're 30. And I thought to myself, why the hell do I want to look like I'm 30? I want to look like I'm 50. I had a ball during the 40s. I love the 40s. Absolute blast. I learned so much and have so many incredible life experiences. I can't imagine what the 50s are going to be like. So for all of you youngsters out there who are listening to this, and I'm talking about you guys who are between ages 20 and 40, don't buy into all this hype. I can't, you know, for your generation, it has got to be so hard. The need for perfection, the breast implants in the 16-year-olds and all of the stuff on television about, you know, you can't have a decent life unless you get your butt lifted. I just can't imagine. It's got to be the pressure. Don't fold into the pressure, you guys. Be who you are. Enjoy being who you are. Just don't fall for it. Hollywood doesn't have all the solutions. But anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to go back to talking about some of the stuff that we were talking about last week, because I'm going to tell you what. I am just getting more and more and more disgusted with the regular media. By keeping us from really learning about afterlife beliefs and ongoing research into life after death, yes, it actually does happen. You know, we talked about Dr. Jan Holden last week, who is doing excellent work at UT, and then there's my buddy, Dr. Bruce Grayson at the University of Virginia, who just does incredible research. I mean, you have these folks who are really, really doing some interesting research on the experiences that those of us have had with regard to afterlife communication. And unfortunately, we as a society, you know, it's just, we just kind of walk around acting numb, lost the ability to think for ourselves, sit there in front of that boob tube and wait to get fed pablum by Hollywood. We wait for science. I'm not talking my buddies who are doing this great work, the International Association for Near-Death Studies, some of these other groups that just really get out there and do some wonderful stuff. Typically science, you know, like run-of-the-mill science is backed by major pharmaceutical companies. So science, when you look at statistics, you need to know this. I studied statistics in graduate school. I was the worst one in my class, but actually I did learn a little bit. Statistics can be skewed. They can be skewed. So if a major pharmaceutical company wants to push an idea that might support the drug of the month, they're going to put a spin on their research. That's just the way it works, gang. And if our independent thinking involves investigation into afterlife matters, well, who's going to make a buck off of that? Who on earth is going to make a buck off of that? I'm looking into doing some research at the University of Texas Medical Branch, if I can find a way to get in there. I think that the departing visions of the dying, people who are getting ready to die, oftentimes report seeing deceased relatives. It's a positive experience. After they have these visitations, visions of deceased relatives, they calm down. They're not so frightened of dying. They actually are in a better place. They're easier patients to deal with. It's a positive experience. It's positive for the family. But, of course, at most of the major hospitals, what they do is they will say, well, your Uncle Charlie was delusional, he was hallucinating, so we gave him a strong antipsychotic like Haldol, and he should be okay now. There just is such a lack of understanding about how these experiences, these encounters can actually be of assistance, how they can help us. But see, I'm not backing any pharmaceutical. I'm not pushing anything for any major large company. So we'll see how difficult it'll be for me to get something off the ground. So for the next hour, almost hour, we're going to investigate the naysayers who tell us physical death is the end, and we will clean up, that's right, gang, clean up the misinformation Hollywood has presented to us about the paranormal. I could just scream. I am so sick and tired of Hollywood and all of their antics and the lack of information that is positive about life after death. It's either airy-fairy stuff or spooky-wooky yuck. And I'm mad again. I am mad again. I'm spitting mad again. 2 weeks ago, we talked about one of the oldest documented religions on the planet. We talked about voodoo. Hollywood, as we discussed, Hollywood always makes it about faces painted white and slitting wrists and blood everywhere and zombies walking out of the grave and strangulation, and that's what a lot of you out there think voodoo is, that it's a superstitious behavior that is practiced by people who are savages and they're ignorant. Voodoo is over 6,000 years old, and guess what, gang? Some 60 million people worldwide still practice this religion today. But, of course, science and religion would have us believe that all practitioners of voodoo are cracked, superstitious, uneducated folk. Hey, go to New York. Go to Miami. You have lawyers and doctors and people who are degree practicing voodoo. And to a degree, you know what? I do have to agree that there are some celebrities in Hollywood who have added to this confusion, and as usual, I would like to give them just a little bit of our time. A few crack celebrities have taken away any of the positiveness that this religion can offer. Remember we talked last couple of weeks ago about putting together your own grizz bag, something special that you can look at that has maybe some of the belongings of someone you loved very much who passed on to the other side. And when you're really feeling blue and you really miss them, you can hold that bag and close your eyes and visualize them. Or how you can use a candle to meditate, to learn how to meditate, to sit quietly, look at the flame, and listen to your mind chatter, and then work at calming your mind down. Those two activities have their roots in voodoo. Nothing scary there, gang. Well, this was all over the net last year. My favorite celebrity, Michael Jackson, was embroiled in another scandal linking him to devil worship. And, of course, Vanity Fair, my favorite magazine, reported that the man had once paid nearly £100,000. You know how much that is? That's $200,000, gang, for a voodoo curse to kill director Steven Spielberg. So once again, the media is giving us that negative impression, that negative example of how voodoo is used. Michael Jackson, cracked individual. Guy has problems. You know, he's got some gender issues. He has problems. He's drug problems. Problems not understanding that little boys are to be seen and not touched. And what does Vanity Fair do? They splash this all over the place. In the article, the magazine reported that in 2000, Jackson attended a voodoo ritual in Switzerland where a witch doctor predicted that Spielberg and music mogul David Geffen and 23 other people on the entertainer's list of enemies would die soon. This is not the way voodoo works, but of course Vanity Fair has to give us the spin. Jackson, who allegedly underwent a blood bath, oh, that makes me excited, as a part of the ritual, then ordered his former business advisor to wire $150,000 to a bank for a voodoo chief named Baba, who sacrificed 42 cows for the ceremony. This is what Vanity Fair reported. Vanity Fair also disclosed that Jackson wears a page boy wig and a prosthesis that serves. Oh, that's rich. As the tip of his nose. So, yes, so we're going to hear about Jackson and his page boy wig in connection with voodoo, and that's going to make the population, that's going to make us really want to look at what voodoo has to offer. Voodoo isn't cracked. Michael Jackson is cracked. On our last show, we tried to take a serious look at the afterlife beliefs of voodoo, and I wanted to do that because I wanted to show you guys that afterlife belief has been around for eons. Eons, 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 eons. It's what separates us from animals. Now, I am a huge pet lover. My cat is standing outside the door right now. He is so mad. He wants me to get in bed because he is ready to go to sleep. And I believe he has a little personality, and he's out there yelling. Maybe some of you can hear him over the airwaves. But the difference between us and the animals is that for centuries and centuries and millenniums, there has been a belief in the afterlife. And so I want to expose you to this. I want to educate you about this. I want to show you that this is not something that was just cooked up by religions that started maybe 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago. But when we were looking at voodoo, we discovered that these beliefs in the afterlife, they really weren't that different from those of other religions. Well, wouldn't you know it? That very night, right after ending the show, after shutting down the computer and putting my headphones away and slipping into something a little more comfortable, I flipped on the television. My mistake, flipping the switch to the boob tube. I should have known better. Guess what I saw? There was a piece on Nightline about voodoo and the bird flu. Now, don't get me wrong. The bird flu is nothing to ignore. From what I understand, they discovered in Britain that a swan had been infected with the bird flu, and it's something we all need to be aware of and use a little common sense. Wash your hands. It's not that hard. But Nightline, of course, you know, they got to get those numbers up. So Nightline, they had to like really shake things up a little bit. So what did they do? Well, they put together this program on voodoo, and it actually was one of their longer lasting segments. And they sent some guy out to Benin. It's a country that's in Africa. And what they did is they sent this schmo out there to talk to the locals about bird flu in connection with voodoo. And, of course, they begin their segment by degrading voodoo as a religion. I have said this to you folks time and time again. If voodoo works for you, go for it. If Christianity works for you, great. If Judaism works for you, more power to you. If you're a Muslim and that brings you some peace, wonderful. If you're a Hindu, if you believe in reincarnation, if you're a pagan, all these paths eventually lead to the same place. Same place. Probably a month ago, we talked about the different religions, big world religions, and talked about how they all had these afterlife beliefs that were really, really similar. Well, voodoo is just the same. It's the same. It just got a little bit of a different spin on it. So you got folks in Africa who have been practicing voodoo for 6 bazillion years. So you get this schmo, goes to Africa, and he starts his segment by saying, bird flu is more than just a public health hazard. It threatens a way of life that has survived for centuries. That's right, it's voodoo. And despite chasing evil spirits, okay, here's our first mistake. Voodoo is not just about chasing evil spirits away. People here are at a loss as to how to counter the potential devastation of a deadly virus. Bird flu is at the door. Benin's king seems worried about bird flu spreading across Africa, infecting birds in Benin. Well, we're all worried about that. Everybody is worried about that. Wedged between Nigeria and Togo in Western Africa, we're almost sure to catch it, said the king. I hope a vaccine arrives quickly, he said, sitting in his palace, where the walls are said to be sealed in human blood. Okay, that's going to give voodoo a lot of credibility to those folks in Miami who take it real seriously. Two neighboring countries have already reported cases of the virus, and Benin will likely be hit next. People here have a special reason to fear because the national religion is voodoo, and chickens figure prominently in most rituals. Voodoo cocktail, blood, bird blood, and gin. One ceremony, for example, is supposed to summon up the spirit named Cuckoo, which involves killing something precious to appease the gods. Well, part of voodoo does involve sacrifice. The Jews, several thousand years ago, believed in sacrifice. Sacrifice was seen as something important. It was seen as a way of honoring the gods. After sacrificing an animal, the animal was eaten. So there really was a process to this. Now, of course, you can go to Israel, believe it or not, and there are some Orthodox Jews who, during the high holidays, will do some animal sacrifices. There are other religions where animal sacrifices also take place. It's not my cup of tea, being the big pet lover I am, but hey, these people who do these sacrifices and then they cook the sacrificed animal, it's a ritual for them. It's like Passover for the Jews. It's a meal of ritual. It's ritual. It's about honoring. Food is special. So, but of course, we got to go back to Nightline here. Each of the participants receives a blessing from the birds being sacrificed in some sort of baptism of feathers. Then each person drinks blood straight from the chicken's neck. I was out with my friends tonight. When I was a kid, I grew up with a bunch of Armenians. And these Armenians would eat raw meat. It was a somehow they cured it. Now, it's not my deal. People eat sushi. People eat different types of foods that maybe for me are not something I want to get down and munch on. But these folks in Benin, what they do, part of their ritual is they drink a little blood from a chicken. Well, if it works for them, whatever. The rest goes into a full glass of gin. Well, I have a few friends that could go for that. No problem with the gin. Participants then fall into a trance. People believe the person is no longer a man but a fetish, a human body inhabited by a spirit. The spirit apparently likes to play with the body, which leads to a frenzy of dancing. Now, y'all need to know that while I was watching this, they had a couple of people, of course, wildly dancing. But what do the Sufis do? The Sufis go into a frenzied sort of dancing. Hasidic Jews go into a sort of frenzied dancing. But, of course, the media, you know, they need the brownie points, so they can only show the most odd of oddities in Benin with regard to their voodoo worshiping. So, they have to stop killing the chickens, a relief worker said. They should stop it at once. Benin voodoo priests changed their practices. This was my favorite part of this whole piece. My favorite part. About 15 years ago, but seem unwilling to do anything now. Until the early 1990s, human beings were sacrificed instead of chickens. But change seemed unlikely now as superstition runs rampant. Okay, so you have this teeny tiny little country in the middle of Africa with, oh, I guess the population is what, maybe 4 million? It's a small population. And then you've got a section of the population that is into voodoo and probably an even smaller, very small part of the population that did some human sacrifices. But got to blow it all out of proportion here. Media always does a great job of that. At the fetish market, a foul-smelling hodgepodge of stalls. Salesmen say they sell exotic cures for every ailment. And, of course, you know what they do is they show all this really gross stuff, laying, you know, body parts of animals laying all over tables. Well, in certain Asian countries, you walk down the street and you can see some fowl deplucked hanging in the windows. You can see some pretty gruesome things, animal parts in grocery stores. At the nearby voodoo convent, the priests show off their night watchman, a spooky straw figure. They have guarded Benin since the beginning of time, the priest said. They never sleep. He warned not to point the fingers because it could lead to a finger falling off. Even under the watchful eye of the guardians, the priests admit knowing very little about a potential pandemic. Well, hello! Okay, so here we've got the problem. Herein lies the problem. You're worried about bird flu? As opposed to getting all upset about what the locals are doing with the chickens, why not go over there and educate? Teach people how to identify bird flu in their fowl so that they can remove the diseased fowl so that the disease does not spread. Why not talk to the people about washing their hands? Why not talk to the people about raising chickens that will be safe if they're quartered off somewhere so that they can't be infected with bird flu? Why can't we talk about that? Because it's much more sensationalistic to talk about human sacrifices, walls sealed with blood, and sucking the blood out of the neck of a chicken, and presenting that as what voodoo is. Don't you just love it? Relief workers are supposed to be out educating people, but most people seem to be in the dark. Well, why are they in the dark then? That's the problem. The Benin government, including the king of voodoo, have no answers. Well, education is a wonderful tool. What will voodoo do? The minister of the voodoo cult asked. If voodoo can't eat chicken, voodoo will starve. Oh, I could just scream. Why couldn't they, like, go to New York and interview some doctor who practices voodoo and get a spin on it a little bit? You know, talk to the doctor, the lawyer, the judge, the businessman who's praying to one of the gods after making his sacrifice so that his son gets well or his business improves or his wife comes back. One of the relief workers stopped eating chicken a month ago when he first heard about the bird flu. Now more than ever, Benin needs all the magic it can muster. Now more than ever, the media and Hollywood, they need a reality check. They need a big reality check. the cultural values of voodoo embrace and are centered around the ideas of honor and respect. And honor goes to their concept of God, to their idea of spirits, to the family and the society, and to oneself. This nightline rundown on this religion, which is practiced by 4 million living in Benin, is not the type of voodoo practiced by millions upon millions upon millions of people around the globe. According to religioustolerance.org, that's kind of an interesting site, y'all. If y'all want to go check out some, try to get some facts on the different religions around the world. But according to them, some 50 million people around the world practice one form of voodoo or another. But Nightline just had to put their Hollywood spin on it. God forbid their ratings would go down if they did a decent job, a balanced job. Balanced news. What happened to balanced news? If you want to learn more about modern-day voodoo, get a copy of Karen McCarthy Brown's Mama Lola, a Voodoo Priestess in Brooklyn. Berkeley, University of California Press, 1991. Seriously. Okay, enough on voodoo. I'm going to get off my soapbox now. Give me a moment here. I'm going to crawl on. I'm going to crawl down and wipe the sweat off my brow and get myself positioned here before we go on. Because I want to talk to you about something. I really do feel that we as a culture are so uneducated about the religions of the world. We really are. We hear one-sided Christianity in the media all the time. We hear literal interpretation Christianity in the media all the time. And then on the other side, what we hear, it's not much better. It's 180 degrees from ill is still ill. So on the left, you have all these people screaming and yelling and talking about what it is they believe in, trying to get their brownie points. And then on the right, you have another form of extremism. And we're very uneducated as a culture about other societies and what they believe in, and how we can take from them and use some of the things that they have within their tradition to enrich our own spiritual life. We don't have to buy their culture. We don't have to totally embrace their religion, their spiritual beliefs. But it's very interesting to learn about what other people believe. I was sitting tonight with a family of Mennonites. You know, their belief systems are very different from mine. But some of the things that were discussed were incredibly interesting. They made a lot of sense to me. We had a lot of commonalities. So, anyway, what we're going to talk about for the rest of our time, we're going to talk about something called ancestor worship. And ancestor worship, it's not voodoo, but voodoo does have ancestor worship in it. Ancestor worship can be found in every society, regardless of social, political, and technological complexity. Its roots can be found in modern-day religions, if you look hard enough. Moses for the Jews is just one example. That's a whole show in and of itself. But do you know that there are Jews who are having their DNA tested to see which of the 10 tribes they are descendants from? You know, according to early Judaism, there were these 10 tribes, basically these 10 families, and they made up the Judaic religion. They're the base for the Judaic religion. There's now all you got to do is get a swab, you swab your mouth, you send it off, and you have your DNA run, and you can find out if you're a Kohan, which is one of the tribes, or if you're a Levi from the Levi tribe. So you have people who do genealogical research. I know that with my group, the Germans from Russia right now, you've got folks who are swabbing the insides of their mouths and sending it off for DNA testing to see, okay, so which part of the continent did I come from, my ancestors, where did they come from? But ancestor worship is really about honoring the deeds and the memories and the sacrifice of the deceased. So, in essence, the deceased, physically, once they are deceased, and their bodies turn to dust, there is a belief that they're still around, their spirit is around. Worship involves visiting the deceased at their graves and making offerings to the deceased to provide for their welfare in the afterlife. I love going to Santa Fe, New Mexico at Christmas time. Absolutely love it. You want to see an awesome spectacle? Go to Santa Fe, New Mexico, or just go to New Mexico and go to the graveyards on Christmas Eve. People go out to the graveyards, and what they do is they cart the deceased's favorite food, and they light candles, and there are places in Mexico where they have whole ceremonies for this, where they spend the night at the grave, and they talk to the deceased, and they pour out their hearts to the deceased. It's just incredible, absolutely incredible. But how many of you have ever found yourself in a jam? Life is really sucking so bad, and you say a prayer to your favorite deceased grandmother, asking for help or guidance. My mother died when I was 16, and she was only 38 years old. And there are times when I just cry out to her when I'm in a really bad place, and I will say, Mom, I need some support here. I'm having a really bad day. Well, guess what? When I do that, when you do that, we are practicing ancestor worship, but don't tell your clergy. Don't tell your clergy unless they're really understanding. Ancestor worship is a religious form of worship which emphasizes the influence of deceased relatives on the living. In other words, the belief is that the dead don't just dry up and blow away. Those who believe in ancestor worship don't see physical death as the end. It's continuum. It is a continuum. I've talked to you about this before, about how hundreds of years ago when somebody was getting ready to move on, it wasn't something to be afraid of. It was just a part of life. There wasn't this belief that once you died, you just disappeared. The spirit was gone. There was a belief that the spirit went on and that the spirit could actually come back and provide support. I have so many accounts of mothers who have passed on coming back to support children. I got one wonderful account of a woman who was lying in bed one night and her daughter was in the other room. And she was suddenly awakened, and she heard this voice in her ear, and it was her mother saying, "You need to get into your daughter's room pronto, right this minute." And at first, the woman didn't, she thought, "Oh my gosh, I'm dreaming." And so she started to roll over and go back to sleep, and the voice got louder, "Get up out of the bed and go to your daughter's room." And she went to her daughter's room, and her daughter had left a plug in a socket, and the socket was fraying, and sparks were coming from the plug, and the blanket was near the plug. And so what she did is she was able to unplug the plug, and she didn't have to worry about her daughter's blanket under the bed catching on fire. So periodically, I get these wonderful after-death communications which describe these cases of deceased relatives coming back and saying, "Here, the will, my will is in this drawer." I have one account where there was some dispute over a will. A man had passed on. His family, they were fighting like cats and dogs over property, money. You can always tell how healthy a family is by how people respond at a funeral and after somebody dies and at a wedding. You can take that one to the bank. Everybody's warts and nasties seem to pop out. People, you can see who's greedy, who's not greedy. Everybody's nastiness or kind-heartedness comes out at weddings or funerals. But supposedly this was just a real nightmare, and one of the sons had contact with the deceased father and received information about where the will was. So when I'm working with clients, when they have unfinished business with a deceased mother, father, when they have unfinished business with a deceased partner, and they really, really want to talk to that person and clean up history, or they still want to feel supported by that person, there are things that we can do, and it basically involves ancestor worship. So clinically, in my practice, me, the PhD, the clinician, licensed, certified, insurance companies love me. We talk about ancestor worship. But anyway, those who believe in ancestor worship believe the dearly departed can lend them a helping hand from the other side. This form of worship is at the core of specific religious practices in China. A lot of Asian-based religions, they're very, very big on ancestor worship. They have altars where they'll have all of the ancestors' photographs sitting there, and they'll burn incense, and they'll have a Buddha, and they take it very, very seriously. In Africa, we talked a little bit about that, Malaysia, Polynesia, the ancient Egyptians. What do you think mummification was all about? Mummification and putting the person in the brine and taking out all the insides and putting them in little jars. British Museum of Natural Science. Ooh, they have some great mummies there. What do you think all that was about? Sitting around the deceased mummified body and reading from the Book of the Dead. And the ancient Hebrews, the Romans, the basic tenet for ancestor worship, it looks something like this. Those who have gone on before us have a continual and beneficial interest in the affairs of the living. You know what's funny? My sister, she calls me to wish me happy birthday. She sends me one of those goofy email cards that says, "You're frickin' old, you're just so frickin' old." And it was actually really, really cute. And then she calls and she leaves me some goofy message about, "Happy birthday to you, old woman." And then before she hangs up the phone, she goes, "Have you felt mom around? You know, it's your birthday, I would have thought she'd be around." And there have been times when I've been in a real jam where I have felt mothering from the other side. Mothers mothering from the other side. What do you think happens when mothers die? What? They don't have any interest anymore? They're not concerned? Or fathers when they pass on? Or grandparents? I have a client who lost her grandmother not that long ago. And, of course, you know, at the funeral, there was all the rigmarole and everybody's warts came out and her death and dying experience was horrible because this one was mad at that one, and so they're arguing over the deathbed, and what a nightmare. Long story short, she feels her grandmother when she's in a really, really bad, bad place. And there are things that she does to continue to stay in touch. So mothers still mother us, even if it's from the other side. Fathers are still there for us. In China, the main importance of this worship is the continuation of the family and reverence. Ooh, here's something we all need to hear. Reverence for the wisdom of the elders. What a concept. Oh, my God. What a concept. We don't have any reverence for the wisdom of elders in our society. Do you guys know that? When you see an older person walking down the street, what do you think? Do you ever say to yourself, "Wow, I wonder how many children she raised. I wonder what sort of hardship she had. I wonder if she was a professional, and if she was a professional, what accomplishments did she have?" Or if you see a older gentleman with a cane walking down the street, like Mr. Harris, my neighbor who lived next door to be 105, when he was 100 years old, the guy was walking around the street. He used to walk to work. Who's going to work at 100? And he looked like a sweet, cute little old man with a fedora on his head, dressed in a suit with a tie. The guy was a multi-millionaire. He was a hotshot lawyer. Smart as spit. But how many of you think like that when you see an older person? I love sitting with older people and listening to their history. absolutely love it. I was with a woman who was in her, about 85. She was telling me about her family and how they had come over from Russia and what life was like for her when she was younger and how she raised three kids on her own after her husband died an early death at 38. And I just love listening to their history and the things that they have to say. There's so much to learn. I got really upset at my grandfather for not telling me about my ethnic heritage. I was so angry. For years I was mad. Oh, I wrote all these letters and would cry and squall and bawl. And I sat down with this elderly gentleman once, and he actually is a friend of mine, and I was telling him about how awful it was that my grandfather never told me about his history. And he looked at me and he said, "You are so out of touch. Do you have any idea what it was like to be ethnic like that, living in the United States in the 1930s and the 1940s? Do you know that for your ethnic group, what they did, the Ku Klux Klan rode at night and they burnt crosses on the front yards of Germans from Russia?" I was dumbstruck. Dumbstruck. Now, would I have learned that if I were sitting there watching Britney Houston or Whitney Houston or Britney Spears or Entertainment Tonight or American Idol? Would I learn such information? Would I get such a gift? No, no. So anyway, okay, I'm digressing here. So there's reverence for wisdom of the elders. Asians, they're so into that. My son is dating an Asian girl, and she's so cute. And she's very polite, and she's very spunky, and she wants to talk. The practice is very ancient, extending back before 1000 B.C., and the practices in Asian ancestor worship in Asian countries essentially is a family affair, and it's held in homes and temples and consists of prayer and offerings. In Japan, this form of family worship is participated in it's like a duty. It's like a duty. It's a duty to the elders. I remember my grandparents going out to the cemetery. You had to go to the cemetery. You had to clean off the stones. You had to put new flowers. You said a little prayer. You caught the deceased up on what was going on. Ancestor worship. So, it's an obligation in many cultures. In Kwanzaa, now some people are really upset about Kwanzaa. They think that people who practice Kwanzaa are trying to kind of scoot in there in between the Jews and the Christians at Christmas. Well, Kwanzaa, I think it's a novel idea. It's a very interesting religion. Basically, it's based on African religion, and in Kwanzaa, there is actually a very religious-like ceremony that is all about honoring ancestors, believe it or not. And one of the first activities of Kwanzaa, how many of you have gone and learned about Kwanzaa, or have y'all jumped on that bandwagon that says, "Ooh, I don't want to know about that religion"? It's a very interesting religion. But one of the first activities of Kwanzaa is the pouring of libation. This also happens in Scotland. They do this in some of the British Isles. They also do this in some of the Hispanic communities. But that's the pouring of a libation for the ancestors. Candles are lit, and part of the ceremony involves the pouring of water from a cup, reciting libations, and roll calling of ancestors' names, as is done in ancient African religions. Do you know at the end of a Jewish service, guess what they do? At the end of a Jewish service, there is a roll calling of ancestors' names. The unity cup, the cup used for this purpose, is used and must be administered by either an elder or a priest. Here, once again, we have respect for our elders. And why is the libation part of the ceremony? It's a very important ritual and actually quotes from the ancient Egyptian religion book called Ani, also known as the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Ani says, "Pour libation for your father and mother who rest in the valley of the departed. God will witness your action and accept it. Do not forget this, even when you are away from home. For as you do for your parents, your children will do likewise for you. Respect for elders. Respect for those who came before us. Respect for those upon whom, who our lives are built upon the accomplishments of our elders. You know, I come from a family where there was a lot of chaos. There was a lot of craziness. Some might call it abuse. And there was a lot of pain in the family. But that pain in the family, I had to take responsibility for that, and I had to go clean that up. I had to go explore it, honestly look at it. I had to feel it, and then I had to release it. And then I also had to recognize that the good along with the pain made me who I am today. And that if it hadn't have been for that, I wouldn't be the person I am today, sitting here talking to you. So, quoting from an Egyptian religion, Kwanzaa continues with the libation ceremony, to remember and honor those who walked and worked before us and thus pave the path down to which we now walk. Jeez, that sounds like Judaism. Ooh, Kwanzaa, sounding like Judaism, sounding like Christianity. Having respect for those who went before us. This is a very ancient method of making offerings to the gods, to ancestors, and it's been practiced also by pagan traditions, other cultures. We talked about the Egyptians, Greece, Rome, Crete, Babylonian. This type of ritual liquid pouring was also extensively used in divination. Okay, that's, you know, getting in touch with the spirits. And the offering could be poured into fires, poured on stones. I know they poured on stones in the British Isles. Statues of the gods, gravestones, glasses, basins, fountains, and lakes. I think I told you guys about the time I had some unfinished business with my mom. I went down to the Gulf of Mexico. I took a picture of her. I burned it. I wrote her a letter. I burned it. And then I put the ashes of the letter and the picture in an envelope. And I stood on the shores of, where the heck were we? I think it was Cozumel years ago. Moon was out, and I took those ashes, and I dumped them in the water in honor of my mother. And I asked my mother to be there for me and to guide me and direct me. Even though she wasn't in the physical, I still needed her in the spirit. And I continue to feel her. So ancestor worship is something we can definitely use. Ancestor worship is our connection to the past and our roadmap to a better future. The actual ritual of ancestor worship is extremely simple, okay? So this comes from, let me see where I got this. I got this from a Kwanzaa celebration. I want you guys to perk up now because, as I told you, at the end of every show, I'm going to give you some tips for utilizing from other beliefs activities that can work for you. So, remember me sharing with you about the candles with the voodoo rituals. Well, Kwanzaa uses candles also. So, for the basic ritual, all you need is a clear glass, write this down, natural water, a white candle, and the discipline to set aside 13 minutes for a day for 7 days in a row, okay? This is you connecting with your ancestors. So you need the clear glass, natural water, a white candle, 13 minutes, 7 days in a row. For seven consecutive days at the exact time each day, you will light the candle and offer prayers to your ancestors. You can chat with them. You can ask them how they're doing. You can ask them to come visit you in a dream. This is not Kwanzaa. This is Carla Brandon. You can tell them you want a sign. You can tell them you miss them. you will call each name three times. And after offering your love and your thanks, after offering the water for coolness and refreshment, and the candle for light and energy, then you can tell them your problems. Just unload on them. I do it all the time. I love to spend some time sitting, and I will visualize all of my deceased relatives just sitting there right before I turned 50. I sat down. I got in a quiet space. I closed my eyes, and I visualized all of them. And I visualized all of them sitting together. And I told them, hey, you guys, I'm turning 50. Isn't that wild? I can't believe it. I'm turning 50. And I needed to share with them that I was really sad that they weren't going to be at my birthday party. And I needed to let them know that I really did miss them. And so I closed my eyes, and I talked to each one of them. And I had a candle lit. I had a white candle lit. And for me, I did. I had a glass of water sitting next to the white candle, and I'll tell you why I had that in a minute, sitting there. But I talked to them about what was going on with my children. I had a few professional problems that I griped about a little bit, the usual. People in my business not understanding that spirituality is something that we all need to be discussing openly. And one of my compadres, one of my peers, had decided that I was cracked because I was talking about departing visions again. And oh, and then there was that website that tore me apart because I was talking about departing visions. And so I had myself a good old pity party and sat there with my deceased relatives, and my grandmother just shook her head and looked at me as if I were just sitting in way too much pity. And my mother, of course, was concerned. And then my father-in-law laughed. He thought it was funny. And my mother-in-law just went. And so after I whined and complained, I wished them the best. And then I opened my eyes, and I took my candle, my white candle, I turned it upside down, and I put it in the water. And the smoke from the candle represented for me my blessing for my ancestors. So that's something that you can do. If you are feeling like you cannot make a connection with a concept of a higher power, you're just having the roughest time. That just seems like, that seems like something you just can't feel. You can start by practicing some ancestor worship. And this is what I tell my clients. I have clients who come in, they have been severely abused, and our first concept of a God comes from not the religion we were raised with, but the characteristics of our parents. And so if they have abuse history, they got some screwed up ideas about God. And so I'll suggest to them, pick a deceased relative that you feel really, really close to. Start journaling to that person. Every day for a month, at the end of the day, journal to that deceased relative. Pour your heart out, you know, talk about the good times, the bad times. Just spend your time chatting. And then close your eyes and visualize this person and ask them to support you and to help you. And that can be your intermediary between a concept of a higher power and the physical world. If you're having a real hard time visualizing, I've shared this with you before, go ahead and pull out some photographs. Pull out photographs. Build yourself an altar for your deceased relatives. Put some flowers there. Burn incense there. Ask them to watch over you. Tell them that you need their support. You don't have to do this thing called life all by yourself just because you're not a part of a formalized sect of religion. You don't have to do this thing all by yourself because you can't connect with the concept of a higher power. You can use ancestor worship to your benefit. So you can do some of these exercises. You can ask for spiritual intercession. Spiritual intercession sounds really similar to the teachings of the Catholic Church, where it is taught that the saints are the intercessors between God and man. Okay? The Catholics have been doing this for thousands of years. They don't feel like they can connect with God, so what do? They go light a bunch of candles for some saint. People worship the Virgin Mary. They go and they stand before her altar and they light candles and they ask for intercession, assistance, help. They have in voodoo, that's basically what it is. That's what practitioners are doing, is they're asking for spiritual intercession, help with loved ones who are ill, or help with business problems, or help with children, or help with addiction. You can do the same thing. You can do the same thing with your ancestors. Something else that's kind of sweet to do is if you have personal belongings from loved ones who are deceased, you can put those on your altar too. You can sit and you can hold the personal belonging for a while and you can close your eyes and you can visualize your deceased loved one, and it'll give you a sense of connection with deceased relatives. I have a friend who carries around with him his mother's necklace. And when he's really in a bad place, what he does is he gets quiet and pulls out his mother's necklace and holds it and closes his eyes and says a little prayer and has a little chat with mom. And then he feels better afterwards. And the interesting thing is, if you take the time to get quiet, guess what's going to happen? The answers to your prayers will come. You will receive the information that you need. You don't have to do this by yourself. Well, gang, it's the end of another wonderful hour, and I've really enjoyed spending my 50th birthday with you. Don't listen to the media. I don't like the term 50 is nifty, but I'm going to tell you something. At 50, I feel more in my body. I feel more connected with me. I feel more confident than I ever have before in my entire life. I feel like after a half a century, I finally have some wisdom. But thankfully, I understand that when I'm not feeling real wise, I can reach out to those who are wiser than me on the other side. This has been Dr. Carla Wills Brandon, and you have been listening to A Walk to the Other Side on BBS Radio. Good night and sleep tight.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.